Production. Recorded live.
Hello, everybody. This is Rick, and you're listening to the EMSO, EMSW, and Affair Recovery Library Q&A call. We've got a bunch of questions today. Everybody, thank you for writing in. Oh, by the way, it is the 18th of August, 2014. So let's get to these questions. First question. Here we go. Married 12 years, and my wife has had an emotional affair with one of her teachers at her college. We are 3.5 months from D-Day. D-Day came before they actually discussed their feelings. She is deeply in love with him. There has been many transparent honesties. Why don't I start that all over again? I'm so sorry, guys. Married 12 years, and my wife has had an emotional affair with one of her teachers at her college. We are 3.5 months from D-Day. D-Day came before they actually discussed their feelings. She's deeply in love with him. There has been nearly transparent honesty since D-Day, and we're actually communicating well. She's even apologized for hurting me with her affair. The thing that compounds her affair is that although he was obviously in love with her, he refuses to act or even acknowledge, but at the same time, zero denial, his part in the affair when she confronted him to end it. She's now dealing with feelings of rejection on top of the shame of what she's done and is having trouble moving on. Her pain from this and thus her situational depression runs deep. She has had several sessions with Leslie Hardy, and they've been very beneficial. My real problem is that I want to be able to help her. I want us to begin to heal, and I know that cannot happen unless she releases him from her heart. I know it's a process that she has to go through. I know that I cannot do it for her. But there has to be something I can do to help her through the process, right? There has to be some things I can do to help ease her hurting and help her move through instead of her being stuck. Any advice? Well, I'll just tell you that is a very difficult situation. Certainly not the first time I've heard about that or seen that sort of situation. There really isn't a whole lot to do. In fact, you, in reality, may be the most difficult person for her to deal with. She needs to be able to be objective as she talks about it, and probably as she talks about you, it gets even more confusing, particularly since she's probably rewritten part of your history. She probably doesn't see you clearly anymore as ways to push away her own guilt and shame as far as what she's done. Normally, for husbands in your situation, I recommend they listen, but that they don't give advice. They just listen. I recommend that they do what I call the Rock of Gibraltar, that you can give to her, but you can't take from her. In other words, you can do things around the house, begin to pick up things like cooking or other things around the house, but don't approach her trying to get her to talk to you. That would be taking something from her. Don't even try to initiate sex with her. That would be taking something from her. Because of her guilt, anytime she feels demand from you, it's also going to drive her the other direction. The more you say you've got to think through this, you've got to work through this, this isn't right, the more you try to persuade her, because of her ambivalence, the more it pushes her away from you. This is an approach avoidance situation. She needs someone like Leslie who can talk to her and be non-judgmental, who'll just listen, and even knows how to deal with her ambivalence. The other thing you can do, if she sees you working on yourself, trying to become more of who you need to be as a spouse, that brings hope to her. You growing in your own strength, you growing in your own confidence. Oftentimes when I've had men in this situation, I suggest that the goal doesn't need to be about trying to save the marriage at that time, but the goal needs to be your own focus, trying to become the man that you need to be. And hopefully, as you take that journey, you'll also become more appealing to her. On the other hand, if you just sit there and try to persuade her you're a great guy, probably not a lot will happen if you try to compete with the other guy. So I would abandon competition with this professor, and I would choose ultimately your own growth, and that would help her more than anything. But I would remain somewhat ambivalent about the marriage. Again, if you push her toward the marriage because of the approach avoidance, she'll probably pull away. If you sit there and just remain, like I said, the Rock of Gibraltar, not really expressing anything, being there for her but not demanding anything from her, being willing to listen, those would probably be the best things you can do. Hope that gives you some ideas. Additional discoveries. My wife has had an emotional affair with her teacher. Because he was her instructor, she had to limit contact for 1.5 months after D-Day. And this time, she limited her interactions with him. However, yesterday, she revealed additional gift giving that occurred on the last day of class, a day I begged her to skip because it wouldn't affect her grades. Needless to say, this revelation sent me into a bad spiral, as 100% honesty was something I thought we had. She had been telling me that she was going to stay and work on the marriage and then give him a sweet sentimental gift to always remember her by. Am I wrong to feel betrayed here? She says, I told you the truth now. I could have kept hiding it. She says it was her way of saying goodbye, but I can't even look at this household item without flooding now. She's still processing the separation. I don't know or don't want to blow up her constantly and hinder her recovery. I'm hurting and don't know how I should proceed here. Any guidance for the hurting? Yeah, that's a tough one right now, since she seems to be very ambivalent. And that's typically not the way affairs end. Because if you demand at this point that she get rid of it because of her ambivalence, most likely, again, it's an approach avoidance situation. She will pull away. This is a very rare situation. Normally, I would tell people it's all right to ask somebody to get rid of something. It's all right. The relationship ultimately needs to be severed. If she's in therapy, I would suggest or would hope, and I believe they would, work with them on how to get rid of gifts like that. They'll work with her on how to sever that relationship. And hanging on to mementos isn't the way to do it. But at the same time, you being the one with this sort of ambivalence to do that probably won't help any. The one thing that you could do, I mean, if you want, you might be able to tell her that you're not going to be in the same proximity as that because it's too painful for you. And if she keeps it in the living room or wherever she keeps it, I just flat wouldn't go to that room. And just say, for your own sake, for your own boundary, that's just too painful. So if it's something in the bedroom, I'd say, you know, I really don't need to be in here for my own sake. It's all right to draw a personal boundary. But again, if you try to tell her what she has to do with ambivalence, she'll go the other direction. That may sound absolutely crazy to you, but I would say drawing a boundary, saying it's not something that you can be around, and then Tell her you're not trying to make her do anything, but you do know what you need to do to protect yourself, and you hope she can understand that. And again, wherever it is, I would not enter that particular location in the house. And at least you can protect you that way. And again, don't do it out of anger. Just say, that's too painful for me. It may be too painful for you to get rid of it. It's too painful for me to get around it. The only compromise I can see is I can't just not to be around it. I don't think that would drive her away. She could probably understand that, and you could handle it that way. Again, this is a very unique situation. This isn't normally the type of advice I would give someone, but in this situation, that's about all you can do. Next question, when is enough enough? Rick, I recently discovered through evidence sent anonymously through the mail that my spouse has been lying to me about two emotional affairs he had with women at work. I discovered that they became physical during both affairs and many, many other things that he's been denying for the past 19 months, including a throwaway phone, expensive gifts from the AP on birthdays and holidays. I was always told that he never had time to buy me gifts. The AP and I share the same birthday. And the fact that he had stopped all contact. He admitted to me that they were kissing in her office just last month. We've attended EMSW, five different therapists, have done Beyond EMS calls in which he was successfully able to make all therapists and participants believe that all he had done was to call and text too often, and that was the extent of the affairs. The evidence I received in the mail and his resulting confessions have left no doubt of the depth and scope of the affairs, and that he's capable of being a very smooth liar. I'm shattered again, back to square one, in the recovery after 19 months of working on myself and my marriage. To his credit, he appears to be showing some remorse and has appeared to be trying to keep our marriage, but the small amount of trust that was beginning to return has now been nuked. I'm back to zero trust. No belief in anything he tells me. I don't believe him when he tells me he loves me and that he wants me to know that he's through with her. He watched me suffer for 19 months when all he had to do was be truthful. I don't believe he's through with the AP, and my instincts tell me that as soon as he thinks the marriage is intact, it will continue. Then he will quietly go back to her. One thing this most recent revelation has taught me is to trust my instincts. What are your thoughts on someone who has successfully deceived five different therapists, friends, and family, and his EMS group? How likely is change, and should I even stick around to find out since he lies, and I won't ever truly know if he is being truthful or not? Is it time to say enough is enough? We've been married 36 years, and he's been deceiving me for 18 of those years. I feel like our marriage has been a sham. Thank you. So, in change cycles, and I'll tell you, there are two ways to go with this, and it really depends on your own heart. I know 36 years is a lot of years. What people do oftentimes is very complicated. Sometimes people choose to stay married at this state just because of life stage. But choose not to even have a relationship. They just say, look, you do your thing, I'll do my thing. I'll be faithful, but I can't live with someone I can't trust, certainly. Or it's okay just to flat out say, I'm not interested in this relationship anymore, and file for divorce. If, in terms of your question, can someone change? Absolutely. But let me explain what an addiction is. In an addiction, there are four C's. There is a craving that's set off by some sort of hedonic reward center that was set up by what's happened. So certainly that craving can happen. When the craving happens, at that point they can't quit thinking about it. They really go, it's like if you decide that you get a craving for some sort of food, you just think about it more and more and more. And then they'll tell themselves, and this is how you know it's an addiction, they'll tell themselves that they just will do this. It's a compulsion, you know, that they're going to do moderation. Maybe they'll just text. Maybe they'll do this. And then the compulsion kicks in for an addict, and suddenly, once they allow it to start, it goes far, you know, it goes farther than they ever imagined, that they ever intended it to go, and they lose control as a result of it, and it ends up in negative consequences. So can someone deal with that sort of situation? Because it sounds like that whole craving, compulsion, losing control, negative consequences, hurting others when he didn't mean to, is there. And more than that, he can say all day long he won't do it again, and the probabilities of it something happening again are way, way, way high. And all that has to happen is the craving will happen, and he'll be saying, I won't do it, I won't do it. And then suddenly the intense craving makes him go, okay, well, I'll just do this to get rid of the craving. And then the compulsion comes, he loses control, and then negative consequences. And it can spin over and over. To stop that, it really has a lot to do with him and not nearly as much to do with you. In the change cycle, somebody has to be willing, after they relapse, they have to be willing to do more than they were willing to do before. That's the only way that we can tell whether somebody's making progress and moving toward health. If he was attending EMS, Beyond EMS calls and seeing a therapist, obviously there has to be far more. You know, he needs to be, he has to decide what he would do ultimately to keep you safe. I mean, if he's willing to do something like 90 meetings in 90 days to begin to address that, then, yeah, potentially he could change and he could be safe. If, on the other hand, he's just sorry and he really won't do it again, or he's just going to go to therapy, he's already done those things. He's got to be willing to do something very, very new. And it needs to be, you know, maybe he can talk to somebody about what that would be. But without that, then I would say he's never going to be able to be safe. He'll never change because he's not dealing. Ultimately, that craving goes hedonic. Reward centers, if he doesn't learn how to deal with those, he can't control it. That's the problem with an addict. It really has to be zero contact. As we say in recovery work, one drink is too many, 20 is not enough. Doing more of the same is crazy, and I would get far away from him. You trying to give him motivation is crazy. You need to be willing to just see what he's willing to do. I would certainly suggest in a situation like this where there's been a lot of deception that he would, for you to be in it, you might give him what you would need to be safe, which would probably be, I would want to at least have him doing polygraphs every year for the next 5 years. And if those are things you need, if he can't do that, then that's also an answer. So what's he willing to do that's different than he's done before? And is he willing to do what you need to be safe? And if not, the marriage is over. That's what I would say. And it's always, it's okay at this stage too for the marriage to be over. I'm certainly saying you can't do that, but if you decided to be in it and know if you could go forward, those would be the things I would want to see and what I'd recommend. Rick, this is a great question. All people are scum. Can you please elaborate on what you mean as all people are scum as you describe in EMSO and Married for Life? Is this a professional conclusion, a personal opinion, a general consensus from counseling people? Thanks. Okay, we've actually changed that in the new notice to just all people are disappointment. The all people are scum was really, the fact of the matter is, and in reality, That would be more of a biblical or philosophical piece. All people fail. All people will be a disappointment. In the long run, you'll find that what you believe about somebody, ultimately, there's more. It's incredibly difficult for people to be totally authentic. And we hide the things we're ashamed of. And that ultimately leads to disappointment. And so that, to me, is really what that's about. Because if you get married thinking somebody's one thing or they have certain qualities or characteristics, eventually you'll find that there are other things you didn't know. And as long as you anticipate the fact that there will be information, things that disappoint, as long as you have realistic expectations in a marriage, when the disappointments come, it's not like a deal breaker for you. You knew those were to come, just like understanding that life is hard. If you have an expectation that life isn't hard, that life should be easy, then you're really going to struggle when hard times come. And knowing the truth about people, it's not that they don't love, it's not that they're bad. But we as people tend to disappoint. We tend to be self-centered. And living with that reality and just being able to be graceful, expecting it, being willing to accept it, at least as long as they're willing to deal with their issues, I think is important for a good marriage. Is hypnosis helpful for recalling details of an affair that happened 15 years ago? I really don't know how to answer that. I don't know that I would say don't give it a shot. I think I've had a couple of people try that. They didn't find it that helpful, but I don't know whether that would be the case in every situation. So I wish I could give a better answer to that one, but that would be all I could say about that. Next question, notifying the AP spouse. When I look back at my husband's affairs, I realize that several friends were aware of the affairs. No one informed me, and I wish they would have said something. I realize that it's an awkward position to be in or to be the friend who knows something that the spouse doesn't know. Now I look at my current situation, and I wonder if my mate's AP's spouse should be notified. I've been told that he has a bad temper and that he could be an unreasonable person. I don't know if that's true or if he was just demonized to look like he was the bad guy. How do I know if I should tell him about the affair? My personal opinion is that you don't go telling the AP spouse what's going on. Depending on the situation, there have been times when it's been really good friends where you suspect the information is really going to come out anyway, where I've suggested that their spouse tell them that would be best. Now, what they do is kind of their thing. I don't need to control the outcome. But if you tell them, I've actually seen some very, very negative consequences. I've had people who were threatened. I've had people who've been beat up. I've had property destroyed. And I don't want you to do it for that. But if you've got a friend that has information and doesn't tell you, that's one thing. But I think in the long run, you've got to let go of control and trust that what needs to happen happens, because you really don't want to get the AP involved, I think, in a different sort of way. I've also had cases where people have told that lawsuits have happened, which actually keep people associated with that other couple for a long time. I've also had in situations where somebody tells the AP continually lie, and then actually charges of sexual assault filed against the person, the spouse of the one who told the AP. just don't think it's a good idea. If they need to know, I'm sure it'll come out. If it doesn't come out, the fact is, and this is sad, their relationship will never be whole. But I don't know that their relationship is your responsibility. Self-esteem. My hurt husband came into our relationship with self-described low self-esteem. I have admittedly not done a great job over the years of pursuing trying to build his esteem, primarily because I didn't understand my role in it, because I didn't need him to build me up for my self-esteem to be so high. My parents thankfully stacked the deck in my favor. Pride carried me for a while, and then I learned to base my worth on what God says, not what people say. And now, hang on to dear life for those truths. When I do try to build him up, my attempts are always rejected and twisted into blame, making it very difficult to continue trying. He doesn't believe the things I say, but then turns around and blames me for not making his low self-esteem high. If we were within 2 years of typical recovery, if we were within the 2-year typical recovery window, I would expect for it to just take more time. However, both the affair and D-Day were 16 years ago. At this point, what should my role be in trying to help him build and rebuild his self-esteem? How do I help? Or can I? He is not one to pursue counseling or read. Whew, that's a tough one, since he's not willing to pursue anything. There's a cognitive distortion called disqualifying the positive. Some people, because of the way they see themselves, it makes no difference what they're told. Ultimately, they'll disqualify it because it's inconsistent with how they see themselves. With people like that, it's an impossibility to get them to even hear what somebody says. They're automatically going to disqualify it, and then they will blame someone else for their problem, because as long as they can blame someone, they don't have to take responsibility and do anything about it. Therefore, they don't have to read or go to counseling. I would tell him that his esteem is really his issue, not yours, that you're certainly willing to be a good mate, to be encouraging, but you can't make him accept your truth. His truth is such that he can't even hear your truth. If he reads nothing else, maybe he could look at something very short about what disqualifying the positive is. With disqualifying the positive, if someone wants to change that, every time they do it, they have to tell themselves a different part. So they would say, you say something nice, he gets mad, says that's not true, blames you for the way he feels. The second he has that emotional response to you telling him something, just affirming him or appreciating him, the second that happens, what he needs to do is say, okay, there's that disqualifying the positive. And then, and this is a behavioral thing, you write down what was the thought, you write down disqualifying the positive, and then you write the truth. And the truth is, she said this, I felt this, disqualifying the positive. Okay, it may be true, but on the other hand, or it may be that she really is saying that and doesn't mean it. But the truth is, she could also really mean it. She really could think that. And I need to let that in. So they write down the negative thought. She's just lying, cognitive disqualifying the positive. And then they have to write down what's the truth. Good chance she really does mean it, and I just can't hear it. There may be good things about me. Over and over, they have to write the truth in order to break that pattern, so they quit using the disqualifying the positive thinking error. If he's not willing to do that, there's really not a whole lot you can do. I will say that in marriage, though, you need to be trying to give each other affirmations all the time. I mean, the masters of marriage, people that have great marriages, are really good at affirming. I wouldn't get discouraged as to whether or not he accepts it. I would just continue telling him what you appreciate about him. Whether or not he accepts, it's his deal. But I can tell you, as long as you're doing that, you'll be helping the marriage and protecting it. Now, that's the end of our questions today. I want to thank everybody for those questions. Those were great questions today. Appreciate that. And we'll do it all over again next week. To healing.